we're excited to have joining us this morning in the studios from the University of Maine, Dr. Ali Abedi. Dr. Abedi is working on a project that is about to make its way to the International Space Station, which is pretty amazing in its own right. Dr. Abedi, thank you for being here this morning. We appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
Now, you've been at the university for about a dozen years now and worked on a number of different projects. And a lot of the projects that you're working on are the direct result of funding made available from NASA, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. As we all know, space technology has changed our lives, and this is another example to show us how working on extreme environment can help us improve our lives here on Earth.
Now, extreme environments present extreme challenges, and the primary challenge is making sure that everybody who is working in those extreme environments is safe and sound and doesn't have to worry about things like air and water and food. The device that you are sending up to the International Space Station is aimed specifically at the idea of keeping a close eye on leaks, air leaks in particular, that apparently are surprisingly common on the space station. These are something that they've been contending with throughout the life cycle of this particular facility in space.
That's correct. So Space Station, as we all know, is in the outer atmosphere, so there is no protection as we all have here on Earth. So they keep getting hit by micrometeoritic and space debris all the time. So there are tons of small kind of dents on the Space Station. The engineering design of that is so robust that it's still operating. But we had issues with the leak in the past few years, and going back to the 1976 all the way to this year, that sometimes they had to actually isolate a module, go out and repair it, and come back inside. So this is a serious issue up there.
You're talking about a spacewalk where somebody's going to the exterior hull of the space station and literally applying, for lack of a better term, a patch.
Exactly. They have a leak repair kit right now.
I'll go for my bicycle tire.
Duct tape, right? Is it just basically duct tape?
No? Probably a little bit more advanced, but it's a similar technology.
It's space duct tape. Yep.
But the issue is that they cannot locate it right now. So there is air sensor pressure that they can realize air is escaping. And if it's below a specific threshold, they just pump more air. But if it goes above a specific threshold, then they have to get these handheld ultrasonic booms like the plumbers have and kind of sweep the whole wall and figure out where is the location of the leak. So the system we designed and developed at the University of Maine is basically eliminates the need for that. It's all automated. It tells them exactly where is the location, so they can just go and look at it and see if it requires more attention.
So what you have crafted is literally a wireless detection system that can be incorporated into the existing systems on the International Space Station. They can reference the data that wireless system creates, and it will pinpoint any sort of a leak. What sort of volume are we talking about here, sir? I'm imagining certainly any leak is a bad leak when you're on the space station, right? But is there a... You mentioned the robust development of this thing, and it allows for them to continue operation despite some of these leak issues. What's the cutoff point here for your detection system? How small a leak can you pinpoint?
At this point, we can actually pinpoint leaks which are even a tenth of an inch or maybe a hundredth of an inch. So the technology does not really rely on the size of the leak. Instead, we rely on the ultrasonic waves which are coming from the leak. So we constantly listen to those ultrasonic signals and try to pinpoint. Some of these leaks may not be of interest now, but if we go to deeper space mission where the air supplies are limited, they become interesting. So at this point, this is the first stage, first test. So we hope we can even come up with some idea of the size of the leak, as well as the type of the leak, in addition to the location.
I love your reference to them as becoming more interesting. I'm imagining myself halfway to Mars, and there's air leaking out the side of my spaceship. I'm going to find that very interesting indeed. We're speaking with Dr. Ali Abedi from the University of Maine. He is the director of the Center for Undergraduate Research. The leaks that we're talking about here, are they the result? They do result from micrometeorites, but also from, you know, engineering tolerances. Is that another area of interest to continue to refine the engineering of the way in which the space station has been constructed and put together? That something that can continue to work toward eliminating the potential for leaks in how this thing is put together?
Absolutely. As we all know, International Space Station has been put together over a long span of few years and maybe more. And different bits and pieces of that has different technologies, the hatches, the airlocks, the interior walls. U.S. module is different than the Russian module, etc. So we hope that by putting three of these shoebox-sized leak detection modules, we can also get some insight in terms of the background ultrasonic noise and the leaks that are coming from the aging of the structure, maybe around the bolts, around the washers, and help refine the technology and at least have some sense of how they operate in a space.
I'm just fascinated by this. The environment in which the space station is located, we often hear space referred to as a vacuum. That's a bit of an exaggeration, isn't it? I mean, is space literally a true vacuum?
Yes. I mean, compared to what air pressure we experience here on Earth is almost close to true vacuum.
So the difficulty here is almost 180 degrees from what it would be, say, in a bathysphere that goes to the deepest parts of the ocean. There, you're trying to see to it that you're keeping the pressure out. Here, you're trying to keep it in.
Exactly. It's complete dual problems, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, we have been looking at also monitoring liquid leaks. They also produce some ultrasonic sounds. So we think we might be able to apply this in future to maybe trying to find leaks in pipelines as well.
So suddenly, the research that's going into your wireless sensing systems for the purposes of making sure there's plenty of air to breathe on the International Space Station is the sort of thing that could give people a heads up back here on Earth well before a problem reaches a critical or emergency stage in all sorts of applications.
Absolutely. Some of them that are very low-hanging fruit and we can commercialize them fairly soon is that you can put one close to your propane heater at home and it might even be able to shut it down as soon as it hears the leak. So these are the kind of things we use on Earth today that can be improved and enhanced.
You'll have to forgive the way my mind works, Ali. I'm imagining when you talk about the notion of these leaks actually being heard.
Absolutely.
It's an audible thing if your sensing equipment is appropriately tuned.
Absolutely. So dogs can hear it. It's ultrasonic signal.
Let's take a dog to space. That's where we started, right? Wasn't it a dog originally?
Yeah, exactly. So just imagine this shoebox has like six dogs sitting inside of it, and each of them are looking a different way, and then they come back to a table and meet together and discuss at what angles they heard. And
play
they put it
poker
together, yeah, exactly, and then they pinpoint it. So these ultrasonic sensors are very small, maybe 2 to 3 millimeter each. We have six of them on each box, and they each pair will give us the angle of the signal they're hearing. So they're listening all the time.
Now you're actually sending multiple versions of this sensing device up on a payload. When does this payload head? Due north, I guess. It goes straight up.
Yes, right now it's sitting on the launch pad in the southern part of Japan, in Japanese Space Agency. It's scheduled to go up to space next Friday, December 9 at 8:26 a.m. Eastern Time.
This has got to be a real sort of pressure cooker time frame for you. We've seen some difficulties in getting payloads to the International Space Station. Our news lady, Wendy Chadwick, was sharing with us earlier this morning a discussion of a failed payload mission. What happens in that instance? Do you have additional shoebox-size sensing equipment that you could provide to another another mission to the space station in relatively short order. Do you have a bunch of these things just sitting around?
No, unfortunately, I don't even want to think about this question. So it took us almost 3 years to build these. Of course, building and designing is something we know how to do. The hard part was flight certification that we had no idea. So we kind of learned through this process working with NASA, Boeing, and Lockheed Martin, who are the payload managers, with weekly conference call and going through all the safety procedure and hazard review, etc. So the things that are right now sitting in Japan to go up to space, that's all we have. So just let's pray for all these to go up safe, right?
We're speaking with Dr. Ali Abedi. So the payload goes there. It gets to the International Space Station. And the scientists on board begin the process of testing this system. How do they go about getting data back to you such that you can provide appropriate feedback to them as they conduct the tests, and such that you can have appropriate data to move forward with further refinements in the development of this device?
So once they deploy the system, it operates like very much like a digital camera, so it saves everything inside the SD card.
Okay.
They pop the SD card out, put it in their own laptops on board the station. They downlink the data to Houston, and then we have a ground station set up here at UMaine, which we are directly connected to the folders in Houston, so we can get our data as they download it over there.
Hey, a shout out to the three-ring binder system for those high-speed internet connections you enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely.
what's next? I don't mean to ask you to jump ahead of what's one of the most amazing developments to come out of the Center for Undergraduate Research. But what do you do next? You get this data back, you continue to refine this, and you develop a more robust system for the potential deep space exploration that I think everybody would love to see humans be able to engage in.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify is that this is one of the many research things that are going on at Center for Undergraduate Research, and I have two hats. So I wear my other hat as a professor of electrical and computer engineering. So this comes out of that department.
Okay.
There are so many other almost equally exciting opportunities that exist for other students. But speaking of this specific project, we hope that we can get some more information about the background noise in a space station, try to locate some leaks. And eventually, after everything is tested in the U.S. module, we have heard some interest from other space agencies, including Russian Space Agency, that they also want to test it in their own module. And we hope that once the boxes will come back to us, we can refine them, create the next generation, and go after much more interesting missions up there.
It's got to be hugely gratifying to have reached this point and to know that the payload that that you and your associates have worked so hard on for so long is ready to go. A nail biter, but boy, I have no frame of reference for something quite that exciting.
It's even more exciting for me to think that this is built by my students' hands. So undergraduate student from Maine, they build this device, they went through the whole program, and now one of them works at the SpaceX, the other one is going to work at NASA, and these are the people who are going to come back to us and provide internship for the future generation of a student to become more interested in science, technology, engineering, and math, which we really need. In the state of Maine, we need more high-tech job, more engineering jobs are being created. We need more workforce to fill those jobs in the next few decades.
So. I mean, you're talking about creating individuals who are going to become global leaders in some of the most top-tier high-tech industry imaginable. I mean, in fact, beyond, global, literally out of this world technologies.
Absolutely. Yeah, we are very proud of our students at UMaine. They're very motivated, hardworking, and these kind of opportunities gives them more confidence, more real-world experience. So we are very happy to have them.
So before we let you go, I just need you to reiterate to me. We talked off microphone before we began about the International Space Station, and I said, gee, you know, my notion of the thing is something right out of a Hollywood movie, and the space shuttle pulls up next door, and it's maybe a couple of times larger than that craft. The International Space Station is well beyond that in scope now. Can you give us an idea how big this thing is?
The overall surface of a space station, including all the solar panels and all different modules, is the size of a football stadium. But when you go inside, the livable environment is the size of a 6-bedroom apartment. So that's why only 6 people can live at the same time.
Right? But that gives you an idea just exactly what goes into crafting that space for those 6 very important individuals. I'm imagining a facility the size of a football stadium, and then way down in some sub-basement somewhere, there's a 6-bedroom apartment that everybody's kind of kicking around in.
Exactly. But we all are enjoying the quality of life we have today because of all these space investment we had since the early 60s. GPS, computer mouth, and so many other things that we use and we never can imagine they were created because of a space. We are using them today. So I hope we get more technologies developed in future that we can also enjoy here on Earth.
Like Tang.
Yeah. Astronaut ice cream leaves a little to be desired, from what I understand. Dr. Ali Abedi is a professor of electrical and computer engineering, also the director of the Center for Undergraduate Research at the University of Maine, the flagship campus in Orono. Sir, we appreciate you being so generous with your time this morning, and we're anxious and eager to learn more about some of the other projects going on at the Center for Undergraduate Research as well. Thank you for being here. We're looking forward to that launch. You said next Friday?
Yep.
Beautiful. Yes. Thank you for being here. We'll talk again, sir.
Thanks for having me.